And they kind of looked at me and they said the answer was alcohol.
Tom Caulfield, James Whittle.
This is the story of The Tempest 2.
So, ladies and gentlemen, The Tempest 2.
Welcome back to the Tempest 2 podcast.
Hi, everyone. We are really excited to be here. trying to keep positive as we look out our office window. And it's absolutely biblical.
Yeah.
The rain is bouncing.
It's got to be, what, two more days of this? And then it's April, so it's got to be sunny in April.
April showers.
Apparently that is actually a thing, isn't it?
But hey, we don't mind about bad weather because we have the mindset of champions.
We're positive.
So bring it on. I enjoy.
We're positive. What I've realised is that moaning is just a coping mechanism. And I quite like it.
Did you read the Mark Manson newsletter about it?
No, is that what it says?
Yeah.
I didn't.
His thing was that it was all about complaining. And he was like, if you're going to do one thing this week, just try this. Don't fucking complain.
Really?
He's like, if you stop it, the difference that it has on your mentality is incredible. And then the second part of it was, people that are assholes
It's
like being an asshole is like a weak-minded. Yeah, that's all I can remember from it. So yeah. Apart from that,
I can imagine him saying that sort of thing.
Yeah,
basically, yeah. You're weak if you're
people that. Yeah, it's just like people that are assholes to people. Here it is. It says being an asshole is a weak person's idea of strength. Complaining is their connection.
Yeah, it's a great shout.
Yeah, so.
It's like that guy who's shouting at the server in Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah.
Really hates his own life, but he's just taken out on the person who makes minimum wage.
I thought, no, I can't be asked to go into that story. it's fucking boring.
This is not planned, guys. Yeah. This is all off
we
script.
We are off the cuff.
That was good. Teeing up a story and then going, actually, I can't be asked.
It's a long one and it's bullshit.
Okay, fair enough.
It says, stop complaining for the week. I know, it's fucking hard, but do it. No complaining. No talking shit about people for 1 week. You can do it. I believe in you.
Okay.
Give it a go.
I'll try that. It's not the people. I don't think I ever moan about people. No, it's the weather.
Depends.
Yeah.
Some people are idiots.
Yeah, when I'm driving home, someone cuts me up. Yeah. I give them a mouthful.
Yeah, all right, we'll try that. No complaining.
A week of no complaining over Easter weekend.
When it's meant to be pissing it down the whole time.
Yeah, but instead, we are not going to be moaning.
No.
We are going to be rejoicing.
What's the positive?
And screaming
Let's
hallelujah.
Reframe it. We're all about reframing. What's the
positives
positive?
Of yeah. Easter?
No.
I was going to say, mate, Jesus came back.
The rebirth. No, what's the positives of the weather being terrible?
Well, it nourishes the soil.
I think the soil's flooded now.
It's overnourished.
Yeah.
It's too much water.
The soil is bedrock for an ocean.
Other than that,
my dog loves it. Loves fucking running around in puddles and
there
stuff.
There you go.
So that's fun. Good for him.
Fun.
Big negative for me there, though. Yeah. Big negative.
Another negative. Yeah. But we're not moaning about it.
No. Just some observation.
Maybe it gives life to the rivers.
Yes.
Helps the rivers
they
thrive.
They are flooding. I saw on the news last night.
No, the banks burst completely.
The head of rivers was on the news last night.
Yeah. He's there going, no, we don't like that either.
The newsreader was like, but surely you must know now, they flood. And he's like, well. He's like, I'm head of rivers. I don't know what's going on. Okay, so not rivers. They flood. Yorkshire's still underwater.
Yeah.
It is...
Well, I'll tell you what.
Resilient. Builds resilience.
It builds resilience.
that's just the answer to any shit situation.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, my AMCC is flying.
So what's the benefit of this? The benefit is that we're very much a four-season country.
Right.
And we're in spring now. You can smell it. And I think in order to appreciate summer, you've got to have some rain.
Okay.
You've got to have some shit weather.
Okay.
So I think as nice and as you think it would be, to get sunshine every single day.
You're wrong.
I think you're wrong.
Yep, fair enough.
I think it's a bit monotonous, a bit boring. Oh, look at me, I'm Los Angeles, and oh, it's sunny again. Grow up.
Get a life.
Get a real climate.
Right, let's dig in.
Right.
So what have we been up to? We had a week off last week because we went busy.
We haven't got time.
Busy schedule, everyone. Busy schedule.
We're delivering an offsite for the London Stock Exchange Group, which was great.
Good group.
Really, really good. We had a keynote in
Harpenden,
which was very good as well.
Yeah.
And we're gearing up for, I think this will be our biggest ever audience. It is a virtual keynote.
Yeah, by a mile.
I don't know why I'm even.
Easily.
Oh, it's close. An 80,000 person virtual keynote. 80,000 people.
No, that's a lot of people.
Every one of them to follow us on Instagram.
Is that Wembley? I think it is, isn't it?
Basically, yeah.
Essentially, right, that's going on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Keynote to Wembley.
We spoke
Stadium.
To Wembley. So gearing up for that, which should be a good one.
Could you make a lasagna the size of Wembley? Do you remember that in lockdown?
No.
Let's move on. That's another awful story.
Sorry about that.
What have you been up to? We mentioned that it was obviously Flory's first birthday over the weekend.
Tuesday.
Over the weekend. Long weekend.
Yeah, it's a super long one. Yeah.
She got a shout out on Manny's gram.
I know, loved
Can't
it.
Can't believe that.
Absolutely love to see it. No, it was good, I think. As good as a 1-year-old birthday party could be.
Yeah.
Went well over the top on a cake.
Saw that. Very nice cake.
Yeah.
What kind of cake was it?
Victoria sponge.
Get in there. Yeah. Best cake there is.
Delicious. In my opinion, if I was to give any feedback to the baker, that's what you call them.
Mm-hmm.
Would be maybe chill out on the icing.
Thick layer?
Just, yeah.
Really?
Like an obscene amount. Maybe because I ate loads of the cake, I was also eating lots of the icing. But I probably had 3 sessions with it. One on the Sunday, one on the Monday, and one on the Tuesday.
Mm.
And I finished a bit off yesterday. and every single time, I felt sick afterwards.
Yeah, it's that icing.
And with like the buttercream, you kind of go like...
Thick boy.
This is just butter.
Yeah, butter and sugar.
A little bit of sugar in. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, it was good. It was good. I think she had a good time. She's at nursery now, so she's probably hating it. Yeah. But no, all good, really.
And
so
you're squeezing a bit of... How many days till London Marathon?
I've got 3 weeks on Sunday until London Marathon. And that's been all right. I did an event, actually, on Sunday.
An event?
20-mile... running event, which is like basically just an organized training session for London. So 20 miles, but they had like water stations and stuff.
Nice.
Went well, weirdly.
Okay.
And I say went well, it wasn't very fast or any of that stuff, but to put some of the listeners in the picture, without being too graphic, I tend to struggle with digestion.
Shitting your pants.
No.
That's what you mean, isn't it?
No, not in my pants, actually. Never done that.
Okay, didn't you do that?
I have done that, but not on a run. not during a run.
What about an Amsterdam? Didn't you shit your pants?
Nope.
Didn't you shout in a bush, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
There's a difference.
The last time I ran that far was Amsterdam, and that was 18 months ago now, and it obviously scarred me. And it was then, really, that the seed was planted that probably pasta doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah.
Had a lot of pasta pre-Amsterdam. Let's just say I got to mile 16, stomach cramps galore. Managed to get myself into a portaloo. And fine, you know, you take that on the chin. Then you go, right, crack on again. 2.5 miles later, and I'm caught real short, and there's no portaloo. So I just dart off. It's like on a little motorway. I jumped over the barrier into a bit of woodland and went there.
Yeah.
And then I thought, right, that's got to be me now. And then the worst one, as I was capitulating on mile 23, and at which point you're in a full housing estate. and yeah, that was when I realised that this has not gone to plan. The time's gone. I'm shot to bits. And my dignity is running down the drain, along with what I ate for breakfast and dinner the night before. Hell. So it was very bleak, but I say all that to say that I...
the moral of that story is
I've got to be very careful with what I eat. So when I say it went well, what I mean is my stomach was absolutely fine.
Okay.
So do you want to know my formula very quickly?
I'd love to.
Is weirdly enough, I have to have a curry the night before.
Okay, that's weird.
That is
just like throwing the dice on the table.
Yeah, you'd think I could roll a snake eyes the day before the London Marathon.
The house always wins.
It's like,
the curry house always wins.
When I say it out loud, it does seem very
Do you know
mental.
Why I'm quick? Why? It's like, because I have a curry. It's like, right, that's going to backfire.
Yeah, but it's a very mild curry.
Okay.
It's heavy on the rice. Has to be rice.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only done this twice, but it's so far so good. And then the morning of, it's a couple of bagels, peanut butter, banana, bit of coffee.
Classic.
Coffee to force the issue.
Yeah, early doors.
Early doors, exactly. To get get a jump on it, get ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And then, so far, so good. Okay. So I really hope not to
gel. Are you eating gels on the run?
Yeah, only on certain distances, but just you got to train your gut.
Yeah, they're high risk, I feel.
Yeah, they are. When you put them on top of a curry.
Yeah.
But like I said, maybe I've got a little bit of India in me.
Maybe.
A little bit of East India Company.
Yeah.
So, yeah, marathon training's going well.
Yeah, sounds it.
But it's mainly driven by my anxiety of Amsterdam. So
we've spoken about what you eat. What are you going to wear?
Right. This is an issue because I text you just in a bit of a fit of rage last night.
Yeah.
Because I realised that my exercise/running wardrobe is embarrassing.
In what way?
As in, it's all between 6 and 12 years old.
Mm.
And I've worn it hundreds of times. And I just need a change up.
Guys, I'm joking.
Okay, guys.
I'm not far off that. I think to paint the picture, we've been very fortunate over the years, but we got stashed out by a couple of brands, didn't we? We're talking many years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Nike, Lululemon, Allbirds.
Yep.
Got given loads and loads and loads of kit. And when you just get given shit for free, it then builds this huge intolerance of buying kit.
Yeah.
Because it's like, whoa, like a training top costs 40 quid. No way am I buying that.
Yeah.
And I think we've got to that stage where, you know, we need to.
We've got to.
Unless we can muster up a deal.
We've got to grow up. And
If you could get kitted out today, like proper is an absolute boatload of gear. Not that kind of gear. boatload of gear, boy, thank you. What brand would you want to be kitted out by and why?
We've spoke about it actually on this very podcast before, so it might be a bit of recency bias, and we were talking about it seems to be the sponsor of the first class cabin.
Oh, on running.
On running.
Yeah, good gear actually.
So maybe it's just linked to that. So I'm a big fan of that stuff at the moment. I do run in Nikes, so I do like a Nike shoe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an obvious one as well. And then maybe a Rogue one. I don't know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Like a Diadora. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Diadora, what are you talking about?
They don't even exist anymore, do they?
No.
No, what would you go with?
Do you know what I like? I do like the new On Running stuff. I like just the basics done well with athleisure wear. I don't want...
I want to be able to do yoga in it.
I don't
want... to the shops in it, maybe.
I don't want big logos. No. I don't want graphic tees. I want a really nice muscle fit.
Yeah.
An extra small. All black.
A schmedium, yeah.
Yeah, I won't wear any colour, just black.
Yeah, so I'm in the process. I do that classic thing that doesn't really help anything, as in I just buy one piece at a time.
Yeah.
I recently, maybe 6 weeks ago, I just bought a running singlet, which is just a vest. And I tried it on, and I missed the return date, and I just thought, who do you think you are? These vests, firstly, I should have a deep tan if I was wanted to wear the vest. I should maybe lose some weight. Runners are quite slight, aren't they? Very slim, not like me. And then I'm like, right, this is a bit of a new age, modern, cool little thing. Oh no, I'll wear it with these awful Patagonia shorts.
Oh God.
Yeah, exactly.
Patagonia shorts.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's horrendous.
So, or like I've got a pair of Nike like cross training shorts and the tick is just like peeling off.
They are old.
It's just like, they're pre-row, they are.
Yeah, I know which ones they are. They are old as fuck.
Yeah. But, you know.
Binham.
But part of me, they're right. No, they don't, hey, don't you talk bad about them shorts.
Hey, they got another 5 years in them.
It's the T-shirts that get me.
Mm.
Because I'll wear, and I hate myself for doing it. But also, the thing with an old gym T-shirt, it'll hold on to a bit of smell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you can wash it in boiling water, and only when you get it up to a certain temperature, you almost reactivate those molecules, and then you might be 20 minutes in, and you go, oh, no.
Oh, no, I'm Elon.
Oh, I stink.
Elon Musk.
I stank, and not in a good way. Is there ever a good way? So, yeah, that's what I'm wearing, so I'm working on it. So I'll be absolutely rocking some sort of fresh garms.
We've got a lot to get through.
We're 15 minutes in.
We're in. That's a big tangent. None of that was in the notes, so...
But I'm glad everyone knows.
So talking about marathons,
yes.
Stinky people.
That's not fair.
No, but they are after what they've done here.
Yeah, but I'm not.
No. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you. An amazing story came out this week. I'm sure most of you would have heard of it. But it was essentially about a British runner, a 40-year-old mother of two called Jasmine Paris, or as I call her, Yasmin Paris.
That's not even funny. I don't know why I laughed at that.
Who became the first female to successfully complete the entirety of the Barclay Marathons.
Now, go on. You're going to have to explain to the listener what that is.
So, if you don't know what the Barclay Marathons is, I highly recommend you go and watch the documentary. It's on Amazon Prime. You do have to pay 99p to rent it.
Really?
Yeah, but it's worth it. It's a Freddo. That's an expensive Freddo.
Yeah, inflation.
And it's, well, essentially, the Barclay Marathon is probably one of the most famous ultra marathons in the world because it is incredibly unique. So, essentially, it's held in Tennessee. It was founded in 1986 by some absolute nut job called Gary Cantrell, who calls himself Lazarus Lake.
The Laz Man.
That basically says everything about it. And it was actually created because back in 1977, the guy who assassinated Martin Luther King Jr., a bloke called James Ray, escaped from a high security prison in that area and was on the run for about a week, I think it was. A bit less than that, 55 hours, that was it. And they couldn't find him. And he'd only traveled 8 miles when they found him. And this bloke, Gary, was like, well, you think in 55 hours he'd go further than that? I reckon I could go 100 miles in 55 hours in that terrain. And the Barclay Marathons was born.
Like it.
You've seen the documentary.
Yeah, amazing.
The thing that makes this race so unique is how, I guess, informal and quirky it is. But essentially, it's a loop of 20 miles, or so they think it's 20 miles. It's not actually measured. It might be more. Some people think it's more. Through just wild terrain. And they have to go around checkpoints. And each checkpoint, there is a book. You're given a race number, 55, James Whittle. And you have to get page 55 of all 11 books to prove that you've done the loop, etc. And you have to do the loop 5 times to complete it in 55 hours, right?
60 hours. 60 is the hours. Cutoff. Yeah, yeah.
That's the cutoff point. And it just destroys people.
Yeah.
Like it is like people are just break down, hallucinating, and it is just monstrous. Yeah. But this woman, Jasmine Paris, did it, which is pretty remarkable, being the first female to ever complete it.
It's like, that's obviously amazing. It's her third time trying, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So she's failed twice. That's kind of a bit of the theme of this event. So they get thousands and thousands of people try to enter. And I think they only allow 40 people a year to run it. So the application form is like mental. No one really knows like what he wants to see in the application. It's just like trial and error. So she's failed twice, but you kind of get preference if you've been there. He knows your story and like you want to go back and do it. So this was like, she was saying her biggest motivation was that she just didn't want to come back. She didn't want to do it again because it's mental. And the route changes every year. So like the order in which you do it, like the loops. So it's not like you know exactly which way you're going the second time. And the most mental thing is that it's a 60-hour cutoff. she was one of four or five people who completed it this year, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
And she completed it with 99 seconds before the 60-hour cutoff.
Mental.
Which is the closest it's ever been to someone actually, obviously not like failing. And they were all in the race village, thought that she was never going to make it. She was nowhere to be seen. And then she basically just appeared out of these trees and is like basically a sprint finish to get to this gate. It's pretty amazing, to be fair. And obviously what makes it hard is the route finding, because as you said, there's no particular route, and the elevation is absolutely awful. I think it's like 60,000 feet over the course of 100 miles, which is quite hard to put into context, but I guess just like that is absolutely loads. Like it's like for every mile you're going uphill like 500 feet, which is like 150 meters,
and it's not like there's a trail. Like bushwhacking
their
basically.
Legs are all like pissing apart, aren't they?
Destroyed, because they go through all these brambles and they just get sliced to bits. And some of the quirkier parts of it are, so when you enter and you get successfully allowed into the race, you have to turn up with your entrance payment, which I think initially was $1.50. and over time, this fucking lunatic, the guy who basically organizes it, he basically decides, he's like, right, what do I need more of? And he's like, I haven't got any white shirts. So he makes white shirt, bring a white shirt as your entrance fee.
Amazing.
So he'll get 40 white shirts. Then he's like, I don't really have many socks. So he'll get 40 pairs of socks. And you have to bring a number plate from a car from your local state or country or whatever with you.
Yeah.
And if you don't remember one of these things, you're not allowed to race.
So you could travel all the way to Tennessee.
Yeah.
And you're not racing.
Yeah. And he doesn't, there's no start time. There's a 12-hour window. And then he will sound a horn. You have 1 hour to get ready. And then to start the race, he lights a cigarette.
Amazing.
And smokes a fag.
The best thing about him is, like, obviously, you've seen it. If you've not, just even Google, like, Lazarus Lake. He might be the least likely person to complete this race.
Definitely.
He's like, he must be 60 plus, smoker, hippie. But I guess it's what makes it amazing. It's, amazing documentary as well. And it's so cool that she's British as well.
So these races, so it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, with the realms of like Tough Mudder, which have tried to like, I guess, commercialize that adventure race, like pushing yourself and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
There's one in the UK, isn't there? That's, well, I'd say it's not famous at all, because you wouldn't hear about it unless you probably were a runner.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's called, what is it? The Bob Graham Run.
Yeah, the Bob Graham Round. And it's
round.
So it's in the Lake District. It's, as you said, not famous, but incredibly famous or like revered in the trail running circle, which kind of mainly exists in like the Peaks and the Lake District in the UK. And it's basically a loop from Keswick Town Hall, and you have to go and summit 42 fells, which for the global listeners here, they're like little mini mountains that exist in the Lake District, and you have to touch the top of all 42 fells that have these like little tower things on. And you got that's got a 24-hour cutoff period. That's 100 kilometers, 42 fells, and 27,000 feet of elevation, which is also like absolutely loads.
Do you have to run it to get in the cut-up?
Yes.
Really? You have to be a good pace?
Yeah. But it's not rapid. It's like pace. It's just pacing. It's I think if you work it out, it's like 10-minute miles or something.
Right.
Which isn't that fast. But again, it's got like different quirks. I don't know a huge amount about it. My cousin has actually completed this. He's just, he's in the Lake District Mountain Rescue, and he did it like 6 years ago. But you have to have a witness on every fell. So you can't go, like we could go and run it ourselves and like try and do it in 24 hours, but it wouldn't count. It wouldn't be registered at all. You need to have, the whole point is it's like a community event with runners in the Lake District. So we would contact this like Bob Graham board. They would help arrange witnesses.
Oh, so it's not like a one day a year?
No.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
So people do a winter Bob Graham round in the summer, but do it on like the longest day of the year and stuff. But obviously they only have like a couple of people. Like you can only have one a day really doing it. So then they'll help you find people that will be witnesses at the top, and they have like guides that will help you. Because again, the hardest thing with Bob Graham is that people get lost all the time.
Yeah.
And the weather is just terrible. But that's the UK version, and it's like one of those things. I'd love to do it. It's just incredibly, incredibly tough. Mm. Like you have to like. It kind of lead on to what we'll talk about in a bit, but it's it has to be the thing that you like think about and focus on like you solely. Just
very specific type of training.
Exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly. And like you said, it's like there's no point going out and running like a fast 10K. You're doing like efforts. You're better off almost just walking for 24 hours with a backpack and eating your food. It's one of them. It's like a proper team sport. But yeah, would be cool. That's for sure. And so you finish. You have to get back to the town hall in Keswick and like knock on the door at the town hall. It's a weird little quirks, isn't it?
That's so British, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Hello.
Are there any like big adventure races? I think like we could do something quite cool in this space. I wonder if people would be up for it though. But like a big, so for our offsites, we actually have an app that we've designed that is almost, it's like a team building adventure app where we send people around the city, whichever city we're in.
Mm.
And they unlock challenges and it's all geolocated, etc. I wonder if we did one where like you start, I don't know, here where we are now, and then you as a team have to get to point number one, which is 100 miles away, and then there's a river, and then you've got to kayak down to this point, and then you unlock a new challenge, and then you've got to get to that point. Be pretty mad, wouldn't it?
Fuck, we could definitely do that.
I don't think it would be that hard to do. It's like, and it was hard and everyone's dead. And we're being sued.
What do you mean, like organise?
Yeah.
I reckon, yeah, we'd have to like just set it off as, look, everyone, this is not an official thing.
You are on your own.
Yeah, you are responsible for yourself. Like, this is the game, or like, this is how we're doing it.
Yeah.
And like, get people on that way, and then as long as we're not responsible. But that app would actually be perfect for that.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. It would start very small. You'd probably get a very small group of people who'd be up for it.
Quite cool though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. God, that would be amazing.
Just a massive terror.
Just the two of us doing it.
Yeah, so would you believe it? We won.
Not weird. No one wants to wade through cow paths all day. That's strange, isn't it? Oh, yeah. Well, let's have a think. Let's come up with the ultimate British adventure using this app. Hmm. Where would that go?
Be a big run.
It's like, bloody hell, we're at a farmhouse.
Oh, we finished at Penny M. And the final challenge is to row the lake at farmhouse and step into Penyen.
Oh, God. That's amazing. Oh, well, we'll have to be right back with that one.
Yeah, okay.
That's not the phrase, is it? Yeah.
So I think you meant to shorten that to BRB. Oh, I'm just laughing out loud over it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah,
good
great.
Stuff. I like it. Right, time check. What are we on?
Yeah, what are we on? Should we push the next bit to next week or?
26 minutes.
Oh, go on, let's push on.
I think we crack on. Right, this is something that I wrote about last week in the Adventure Capital on our Substack. And if you're on the newsletter, you would have seen that land in your inbox.
Oh,
and if you're not, then
sign
do
up.
Sign up.
Please,
plug,
sign
plug,
up.
Plug, 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 plug. But it was ultimately, it was a little article about this thing called deliberate practice, which we've been a bit fanboys of for a few years now. And it's a theory of a guy called Anders Ericsson, who's a psychologist and a bit of a specialist on learning. And we ended up getting bought into it because we realized afterwards that it's kind of exactly how we approach adventures. Given that we have no clue what we're doing when we sign up for these things, and then eventually we end up doing some pretty, pretty cool things. And what it basically is, so it's called deliberate practice, and it is the thinking that most people who are training for something or wanting to learn something do very general practice. They allocate a certain amount of time to it. They don't necessarily deviate from that, and they just go through the motions. And it's kind of like stems from what you do at school, how you just turn up, you learn, you know, what goes in, great, and what doesn't. You might do music lessons as a kid or PE, and you just kind of go through the motions. And deliberate practice, obviously, is the exact opposite of that. It's about being as specific and hence deliberate as possible. I'll break down just the five points that make up deliberate practice. Maybe let's use, like, I'm learning a musical instrument as an example. So say you want to learn the piano, like the 5 points would be isolate the skill, develop the skill, assess the skill, final performance, and practice retrieval. That all sounds a little bit full on, but in fact, actually, let's bring it back to our example of riding motorbikes to the Sahara or climbing El Capitan. Like, we could have easily just turned up, and we did to begin with, and just did generic climbing practice. We'd go to climbing gyms, we'd do a bit of bouldering here and there, basically do whatever took our fancy, which was fine for a little while, but it wasn't actually helping us climb El Cap. And as soon as we kind of went to the valley, realized that what we had been practicing was completely irrelevant, it opened our eyes a bit, and really reinforced like this deliberate practice. So then from that moment on, we spent the next 6 months climbing and training specifically with getting up the nose of El Capitan in mind. So what that meant in reality for us was learning how to do lower outs or jog or hike the bag up or do this only crack climbing, you know, rather than holding on to tiny little crimps in a climbing gym or doing like really hard bouldering moves, which was completely irrelevant. We should just focus on the crack climbing. So it's basically about diving into as much specific detail about the exact skill that you want to learn and doing it. And what's the music example that you gave earlier?
From that book, it was talking about like the difference between, there was a set of students, I think it was at like the Berlin Music Institute or something like that.
Yeah.
And the thing that differentiated those that went on to play in big international orchestras and those that were just session musicians was the time that they gave to this deliberate practice. So when, instead of just learning a song or learning a piece from start to finish and doing it okay, the top performers would learn, you know, two bars or like a finger movement on a violin, but they would do it for a month.
Yeah.
And that's all they would practice. And then they would move on to the next thing once they've mastered that.
Yeah.
And it's the whole concept is it's actually so applicable. If the thing that jumps to mind for me actually in terms of something that's quite relatable to a lot of people is golf.
Right, yeah.
So golf is one of those sports where if you start at a young age, you progress quite quickly, you get like to a good point, but then you plateau. Exactly what we've done.
Yeah.
We've been the same standard for about 20 years. And that is because the way that most people play golf is you go and play on the weekend now and again, you smack a ball, you put it out of bounds, you hit it again.
Yeah.
Or you just go to the driving range and just hit 100 balls. Whereas to get to a single figure handicap, the way you practice is the way you get better. You practice the situations you know you're going to be in. Okay, yeah. I need to practice how to chip out of the rough. I need to practice how to putt or getting out of a bunker. All these things that you know will happen, but are pretty boring to practice.
Yeah.
And the other thing is almost like, I was thinking of when you were speaking then, like Usain Bolt, like 100 meters.
Yeah.
You obviously train to get quicker, but everyone does that. But it's training to the start of the race.
Yeah.
The end of the race, how you finish it, the duck and everything like that.
Yeah.
That is purposeful practice. Practicing things that you then put into play that shave a 0.001 of a second off your time.
Yeah, exactly. And what he says, this Anders Ericsson, is that deliberate practice or purposeful practice should be very uncomfortable. It should require a huge amount of your like energy and attention to acquire this skill. So there's a famous example of Kobe Bryant who would do the normal practice with the Lakers as always, but then he wouldn't go home until he'd made an additional 800 jump shots, and he'd work on a different shot every day. So it might be, I'll do this layup or I'll do this from this 3-point place. And you know, the chances that that shot might never come up in a game, but he's practicing like deliberately with that intention, and it's really uncomfortable. I actually think learning a language is a very good point as well. There's all those classic examples of people that have like 8-year streaks on Duolingo.
They can't speak
a fucking word when they actually go to the country because they're just doing generic learning, clicking through this app, which is, maybe if they see that language in that exact format, they'll be fine. But it's why, as we've said before, you need to have conversations with people, learn one-to-one with people. And it's like, I quite like it because it's uncomfortable, this deliberate practice. It's how you know that you're doing something that's in the right like difficulty level. And it's kind of the opposite of flow. And flow's obviously been a massive buzzword over the last 5 or 10 years, that everyone's seeking this flow state, this flow mindset, and that means you're doing something right. And I like this Arne Eriksen, because he basically says that that's bollocks. Mm. And that actually you can only get in flow when you're doing something at a level that is comfortable to you. It made me think of the climbing again, and made me realize that he's actually got a pretty good point. When we were trying to learn a new skill, like on in Yosemite Valley, like it was fucking scary,
yeah,
and uncomfortable. And then when we'd maybe done that and then we'd just go and climb like in the afternoon, that was when like the time disappeared and it was a bit more enjoyable. That was when we were in flow, when we'd gone back, basically gone back into our comfort zone,
yeah,
maybe just a little bit outside of it, and it will, we were cruising. But when you're doing something and trying to learn something properly, it's actually very challenging. So it's a nice way to think about things, and especially when we're planning our next adventure or people are planning on moving country or wanting to learn a new skill. It's applicable to everything, like, yeah, whether it's a sport, a language, an instrument, even like if you want to write better or DIY at home, whatever it is, it's pretty interesting. So I have a question actually for you.
Oh.
It's just purely off the back of that. Is if you could allocate 12 months from now, where you had to do like deliberate practice like 5 times a week on this one thing,
what would I do?
Because you, yeah, what would you do? Because you'd probably be relatively well versed in it after a year.
Something that I'd like to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't need to be related to.
I would say, probably some. I think we spoke about this before. Some kind of combat.
Oh,
sport.
Yeah.
So I've got, yeah, something like that. Some kind of fighting.
Yeah, you'd get pretty good, I reckon, wouldn't you, after doing it?
So I've got a thing that I've been thinking about recently, which kind of is going against the classic goal setting in terms of January, I want to do this and do that. But I think within the next couple of years, I want to be able to, like, be able to run a marathon tomorrow.
Yeah.
I haven't really thought about this too much. Run a marathon tomorrow, run a sub 25K, bench 100 kilos, and be able to fight anyone in the room.
Yeah, like it.
That's a weird one, fight anyone in the room. But like the key kind of points of, I guess, like it's quite like a caveman-esque way of about like being fit, being strong, being quick, and being able to defend yourself, basically.
Being an all-rounder.
Yeah, just like good at multiple things.
Yeah.
And just basically being a bit of an athlete.
Yeah, I like that.
I think that's quite a good bait. Rather than be like, I want to run this many races and I want to do this and do that, it's more like, I just want a base level that is fucking high.
It kind of means you can do all those things as well.
Yeah.
If you're like, fuck, there's this ultra marathon in like 2 weeks in Italy, it's like, fuck it, let's go and do it. Like, that'd be pretty cool to be able to do that.
I think just having that level of authority across the fitness spectrum is something that I think is actually quite aspirational.
It makes me think actually about the, like, what we're doing with swimming at the moment. That actually feels like quite deliberate practice.
Yeah, this is really hard, the swimming stuff.
That's what I mean, is that I'm not in flow at all.
No,
I don't feel comfortable when I'm swimming, and I'm thinking about every little thing that we got, this coach was talking about, and the sighting and the breathing and the catch and the pull and all this stuff. And I'm like fucking getting lost in it. But we're literally doing it so that at the beginning of September, we can swim this open water 10K.
The thing that is worrying me about it is every length feels different to the one before it.
Yes.
It's like, wow, my technique's just changed in 25 meters.
I'm doing butterfly. That's weird.
I'm on my back.
I'm an otter.
I
completely agree.
There's no like consistent flowy swimming. It's like survival.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's really weird. I wonder if that's going to just click at some point.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's going to.
It feels like I'm getting further away from it clicking.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people I speak to, they're like, it just feels natural. It's like, not for me.
It doesn't at all. It's very difficult, actually. Very difficult.
All right, well, we'll become all-rounders then.
Yeah, fine, fuck it.
Love it. All right, nice.
Amazing.
That's the 40-minute mark.
Woo!
Welcome. Right, we'll be back next week, I think. Or the following.
Maybe the following week. I think we might change the cadence of these every 2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll see how we go on. It's Easter, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, we'll see.
Have a great Easter, though, everyone. Hopefully you can celebrate his holy return. In as much peace as possible. And this
don't
is
worry
not
about
a
the
religious
weather.
Podcast.
Don't worry about the weather.
Do
it
not
matter.
The weather.
And don't complain.
Thank you, guys. Speak soon.